This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. I just read that line right off a computer screen here. And if you were in my brain, you would see things going on while I was reading. The complexity of what happens when we read may just be the most fascinating and accessible story of what science is teaching us these days about the brain. Marianne Wolfe is the director of the Center for Reading and Language Research at Tufts University and author of Proust and the Squid, The Story and Science of the Reading Brain.
When we learn to read, we are literally making an entirely new circuit in our brain that was never meant to be there. So reading reflects this extraordinary, almost miraculous capacity of the brain to learn something new. So the child quite literally is forming an entire new circuitry that connects language and vision and thought in a completely new way to the species. But it also means that's a very plastic circuit that's affected by everything that the child learns in language, by how he or she is taught. And even as we enter a very digitally dominated age, even the medium with which the child reads. So it's a very beautiful plastic circuit that we gain.
Explain how the brain actually piggybacks off hardwired visual system to do what reading is all about.
It's a fascinating exercise even for me to tell you that what we are really doing is not unlike what Pascal said. There's nothing new under this earth, but there is rearrangement, and that's what the brain does. It rearranges the areas in vision, connects them to areas in language and auditory processing and cognitive. Now, all of those were genetically programmed. We are born. They are unfolding. But what reading does is take those very pre-programmed structures and connects them in a new way.
What you describe here is it's as though there's a little character in the brain of every child as they're learning to read who says, you know what? I see what you're trying to do, kid. If we just connect the eyes here with the ears and wire it over here, we can read.
Oh, I only wish it were so simple. But in essence, that's what happens. We connect all those parts that were never meant to be connected in that way, which is why teaching and learning come into the equation in ways that you don't need a teacher, if you will, for so many different functions. But for reading, we have to learn how to do this.
The brains of people who learned, say, Egyptian hieroglyphics or Chinese pictogram language or an alphabetic Greek language or, as English is, a kind of a hybrid, they function very, very differently. Can you briefly give a sense of how a picture-generated reading person's brain is different from an alphabetic-generated reading person's brain?
Great question. And if you can imagine two hemispheres of the brain, with the right hemisphere of a Chinese reader activated and lit up in an amazing way, and the left side lit up equally, you would say, oh, that's beautiful. All these visual processing in both hemispheres are firing. Not the case for an alphabet reader. Only a little of the right hemisphere's visual area is needed. But what we have and need more of is connection to the sounds of the system. So in just comparing an English alphabet and a Chinese reading brain, you see quite different activation patterns, with the Chinese reading brain advantaging and giving much more, if you will, real estate to visual processing, and the English alphabet more into the connections between the visual and the verbal. So you literally see differences in the Chinese reading brain and the English alphabet reading brain.
How has brain research today allowed you new tools to pose these kinds of questions and see what's going on in the so-called reading brain?
John, one of the most important things that has in fact dominated my research is to try to understand how children who are disadvantaged for language in dyslexia, how they literally learn to read differently, how they learn quite literally have a different brain organization that they are using. And this has given us a fundamentally different conceptualization of dyslexia. That, we now understand, is an extraordinary brain with all the intelligence of any person, but it's organized differently and uses language processes differently. And neuroscience is able to quite simply depict that for us when they read, so we can see how best ultimately to intervene with children so they can be their best, very intelligent selves and have a better chance to learn to read at a level which will make their lives so much better than what we had in the 20th century, where we did not have this kind of information.
Well, aside from being a critique of inflexible teaching processes, which you certainly make that point in this book, you describe very eloquently that dyslexia, far from being a dysfunction, is actually a sign, an underscore of just how plastic and reformatable the brain actually is, that it can function in a dyslexic configuration as well as in a non-dyslexic configuration.
Absolutely. Actually, dyslexia is one of our best windows into understanding what some of my colleagues call the cerebrodiversity of brain organization. And we needed that kind of brain organization in our evolution. That brain is advantaged for seeing organizational patterns, for the big patterns, the little patterns. It's by no coincidence at all that some of the major artists and inventors of the last century have a childhood history of dyslexia.
At a point towards the end of your book, you say that reading really set the stage for the brain's human evolution into all of the features that we associate with modern humanity and civilization. What did you mean by that?
I mean that reading is, I believe, our best platform for going beyond the information given to us in any epoch. Proust said this far better than I ever could. It allows us to think beyond the wisdom of the author, beyond the wisdom of a given epoch. It allows us quite simply to emerge with new insights, epiphanies, and thoughts. It is a uniquely, in some ways, miraculous capacity that we possess.
Marianne Wolfe is the director of the Center for Reading and Language Research at Tufts University, author of Proust and the Squid. Coming up, reading relies on the visual brain, but the capabilities of the audio brain may be even more amazing. Prick up your ears on The Takeaway. Stay with us.